Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Monday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, as always, here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. Not a lot in the way of individual news this morning in terms of individual stocks, but a lot to discuss nonetheless, just in terms of the overall market and sort of where we're heading in the largest components and looking at the broader picture of things, which I think is going to be the theme of today's show. We're going to look at the top 10 components. We're going to look at just the broad market and see where that takes us. We'll, of course, answer your questions from our chats. We'll go through the biggest ratings of the day as well, and our guest at 8:35 will be Kate Long, a muni bonds expert. She's the founder of Puerto Rico Clearinghouse. Joel, how are the S&Ps doing, and how was your weekend in Nashville with Jeremy Newsom?
I had a blast in Nashville with Jeremy Newsom. I had a great time doing the show with him on Friday. A little chilly in Nashville for me. I think I'd be used to that being from Michigan. But saw Toby Keith, the Ryman Center. We hit a bunch of different bars on Broadway, had some good barbecue food, and little troubles getting home last night because of the storm, but I am raring to go here in this market, and the spoos have turned green on the session. Everyone thinking that they were going to get a shot at the low of the move, 2603 even. You didn't get that. 2610.25 is your pre-market low. We are now green on the session by 2.5 handles. Very important to stay green today. I don't see any resistance on the upside until you get to the daily pivot, 2656.25. But, folks, very important to stay green this morning. Crude down 59 cents here at 52.01. Crude kind of in a trading range between 50 and 54, really cannot break out of that. Gold above 1250 here, traded down 60 cents to 1252 even. Silver in the red, that's down by 5 cents at 1454. Bitcoin attempting to recover, up $177 at $3,460. And let's say hi to Thankfulness. She is in the YouTube chat. Good to see you back, Thankfulness. How you doing? Spencer, I know how you're doing. Triple D, how you doing on this Monday morning?
I've had better days. throat's a little messed up, but more of my stomach. My wife was very sick with the flu on, I guess it's Friday night. And my daughter was sick Wednesday night with a little bit of a stomach flu. Right. My boy was sick 3 days before that. So I've got a little bit of stomach ache going on here, too. I hope it's not the start of that. I hope it's something that I ate, but I don't think it is. So if I have to get off really fast, you know it's because I'm feeling nauseous if I just leave the show all of a sudden. But not throwing up because of my portfolio, throwing up because of the stomach flu. But let's talk these markets. Holy cow, what a move there on Friday. Giving it all back. I mean, how – you know, this market just cannot hold a rally here, it seems like. You know, we obviously did for a few days there before we had the Tuesday collapse. And what we said on the show on Thursday, I was like, Tuesday's trade changed everything. And we had multiple people asking us, you know, are you buying the dip on Thursday? And you said no. I said no. We were actually wrong about that because we did rally back up, but we give it all back in one day. So this market is very choppy. It's very hard to predict. I was saying I have my buy the dip hat on and sell the rip hat on. I think I'm going to keep both of those hats on still. I just don't know. Like, it's heavy. I know we're still above the support, the lows that we made back in October on the S&P, but it's been tough, you know, to trading here, just if you're trying to go with the trend or go with anything, because it's whipsaw trading. That's why I thought a good exercise for myself and for you might be to look under the hood here today and actually break down some of the top components in the S&P to figure out where this market is going.
And I just want to, before we go into that there, Triple D, I just want to say that we're still in the trading range. And until the trading range is broken, and I'm not even talking about just for short-term trading, for swing trading, I'm talking for long-term investing, a place where I would make some serious adjustments to my portfolio is if we take out that October 29th low of 2603. And we tried overnight. We got the 10 and a quarter, and it could very well still happen today. We're now 35 handles above that. But trading range, I mean, let's still try and think trading range until the trading range is broken. So let's break down.
Let's go into the components, and this is going to give me a better feel, because I feel like, just from, you know, I feel the markets at the trading, that we're going to take out those numbers from October, whether it's today or whether it's tomorrow. I think the only thing that's potentially saves us is if we get a big macro headline, we actually get a full deal or something with China on trade, or, you know, something else, or maybe the Fed comments. I mean, it's going to take a macro catalyst to really kickstart us higher, but it feels heavy to me. That's what I'm feeling in this market. You know, not necessarily today. We've had a nice comeback from the lows. But I think those lows, the S&P lows, you know, the 260 on the SPY is going to get taken out. That's what I think. But let's break down the top components.
Okay.
You know what? They've been changing a lot. Is Microsoft, I believe it's now, is Microsoft the most valuable company?
You got it, pal. You got it.
Mr. Softy, unbelievable. They're back. In the year 2000, Microsoft was obviously, one of the largest. And then Cisco took them out for a bit. And then obviously we have Apple for a long time here. But because of the fall in a lot of these Momo and a lot of the tech stocks there, Microsoft has not fallen nearly as much. And Microsoft is your top component now in the S&P and your most valuable company in your market cap. Let's break this down. What's the Microsoft technicals look like?
Before we break it down, remember how much of a laggard that was when the market took off in, it took off in 08, 09, 2010, 2011. But I think you could have had Mr. Softy under $30, I think, as late as like 2011, 2012.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm kicking myself here, too, because I can remember being at a Capital Markets Policy Council meeting with the CFA Institute in New York, and I was talking with my friend Capel from New York, from a university there, and he was saying, what stock do you like? This is like back in 2014, 2015. Actually, I think it was like maybe 2013, because he's like, what stock do you really like here? And you know, I said, I like Microsoft. I really like it here. And I bought Microsoft, I believe, at $28. And it went up very quickly over the next 6 months to in the 40s. And I sold it. And here it is, you know, $105. And you're like, man, they always say you can't go wrong taking a profit. A tie, I went wrong taking that profit because Microsoft was straight up for the next 3 years. So, Capel, if you're listening, I'll give you a shout out there. I know you're great. Great guy there. And I hope you bought some Microsoft when I was saying that, but I can remember having that conversation with you. What stock do you like the most? It was Microsoft. I owned it. I had it on for swing trade. I had it on for long-term investment. And you know what? It went up so fast. I was like, oh, you know, I'm taking the profits and running. I wish I would not have. So that's your cue, Joel, to break down the technicals on MSFT.
I think Joel's a little frozen. I'm not sure what's going on there with
his Joel's frozen. His can you connection. Hear me? Chuck, can you still hear me? Because I can break down and go a little bit further as well.
Yeah,
well, I'll break down. Joel's got obviously his own technical issues, it looks like, here this morning. So I will go into Microsoft here and just break it down. And this stock has been resilient. One of the only ones of the top components in the S&P that has been very resilient. Still definitely in a trading range. Not even close to the lows that we set back in October. And we did take it out in November, getting down to 99.35. And I will say, as long as it's above 100, you got to respect the relative strength that Microsoft has had. It's been one of the strongest stocks on the rallies and it's held up better in the weakness. So for whatever reason, Microsoft is holding up better than anybody else. But I'm going to go grab those other top components there, too, because I know we lost.
Am I back?
Yes.
Yeah, you're back. Joel just went silent for a little bit. He wasn't liking what I was saying, so he went silent on me. But I'm just saying the relative strength of Microsoft has been pretty incredible.
That's what I was trying to say. It held up for a long time. Big number on the upside for me is 109.5. There are a pair of highs at that area from Thursday and Friday. And then on the downside, you're not quite matching lows, but I keep an eye splitting the two lows from Friday, 104.30 to 105 even. So 104.60 is my major number on the downside here in Microsoft.
What's number two?
Apple.
It is Apple. And you know what? This one, as healthy as Microsoft looks, Apple does not. It took out its lows on Friday, the lows of the move, the key 170 level. It's not right. It's down here. The market's rallied back. It's actually trading down in the red here this morning. The relative strength, not good on Apple. And I will say exact opposite from Microsoft. On every rally, Apple has been weaker. On every sell-off, Apple has led the charge down. So for whatever reason, Apple's still showing a lot of relative weakness here, exact opposite of Microsoft. And I think that it's taken out the lows. I think eventually we're going to test the lows from April, which was down there at 160. I own this one of my invest portfolios. So I'm talking a little bit against my book here. Obviously, I've had it for a long time. I'm in from the 90 area. I think I'm sticking with it long term. But $160 is where I think we're going to test here eventually.
One number only in Apple, that's 170. That was the area of a trio of lows, maybe even four lows. That will be your resistance if, in fact, you can clear 170. Greener skies ahead for Apple. But when you make that many lows in one area and then you break through it, it's great resistance. 170 is my number in Apple. Moving on to the next one, that would be Amazon. And, you know, I just don't follow that closely because it's such a high-priced stock. Just meandering between $14.50 and $17.50. I guess I'll just keep an eye on the pair of lows here at the $16.10 area. $16.09.85 was your two-day low. Then you have another low at 1601. So 1600, that's my number in Amazon on the downside. On the upside, need to clear 1720 to get a shot at the all-time high.
I mean, 100-point moves here. Holy cow. Last 3 days, the ranges. So if you want volatility, you're going to get it obviously in Amazon. 105 points was the range on Tuesday. The range on Thursday, and it messes you up with that day off, so we have to jump over to Thursday. It was no Wednesday trade. 92 points. The range on Friday, 97 points. I'm just quickly doing the math there in my head, so if I get it wrong, apologies. But 90-point ranges the last 3 days. I mean, they don't, you know, have any idea how to value anything, especially Amazon right now. I mean, we know valuation's always been an issue here, but they have, you know, the revenue growth. They could make more money if they want to. But, you know, just from pure technical perspective, major resistance up near the higher 1700s. One that's held up better, though, because if you consider that the market, and especially the Qs, you know, starting to get near those November lows that we just made there a week and a half ago, Amazon is still trading, looking almost 200 points above its low that it set back in that same November at 1420. So a little bit of relative strength here, and that's good news. I would say if it takes out 1600, I think you could just flush right through the 1500. So you want to see 1600 hold here. That low from 2 days ago, which is Thursday, 1609, that would be my bogey if I'm playing it from the long side. Joel's frozen again, so
yeah, let's go.
I'm going to go grab those top components because I don't have them in front of me, and I should because I was leaning on Joel for that.
I got them.
P500. Do you have the other ones?
Yeah, I got them. I got them. If you would
yeah, go to the next one.
All right, next one is Berkshire.
Probably Google. No?
Berkshire Hathaway.
Berkshire?
Well, Google, if you go by like.
Yeah, you can combine them. It's not fair to do them separate. So okay. Google's got to be up right there.
Yes.
Then do Google. We'll
if
do.
Combining Google, yeah. Then Google.
It's annoying that we have to look at two stocks, but they're both the same chart. So GOG, GOOGL obviously trade together there. So let's just go for simplicity purposes. The GOOG.
Okay.
$1,000. This level really jumps out to you. You got down to $995 there back in October. Recent low in November, $996. That's what it needs to hold. The only problem is, we always say there's not no such thing as a triple bottom. Sometimes that's true, sometimes it's not. I've seen lots of triple bottoms before, but you get down there the third time, a lot of times it takes it out. Absolutely needs to hold $1,000. Takes that out, and the bears are in full control here. So not showing as much strength as the Amazon off, you know, that's been coming back a long ways. Valuation, I do own Google in my long-term investment portfolio. Had it in there for a long time. I'm in from $250, so I think I'm sticking with it. But $1,000 is where it's got to hold for me to stay in the technical, at least for the Bulls to have a case.
Yeah, 10-30 on the downside is huge. That's your last two lows. On the upside, almost matching highs there at 10-71, 10-75. So really trade the breakout above 10-75, the breakdown below 10-30. Berkshire Hathaway, that's your next top component. Warren stock here getting hit along with the rest of the financials. Holding up, though, closer to the old-time high than the others. I'll just put an eye on the major support here at the $203 area. You had a pair of lows there 2 days ago, yesterday, and then about 2-3 weeks ago. So 203 is my big number there in Berkshire Hathaway.
Yes? Remember, Warren is a value investor, lower multiples than a lot of stocks that he owns, so that it's going to move down. The beta is just less usually with Berkshire than it is with a lot of other stocks. You know, maybe not, you know, on a day-to-day basis, but overall, the Berkshire Hathaway portfolio is more conservative than a lot of these Momo names, so it's not surprising that it holds up better.
All right, Johnson & Johnson, another
value stock. Is Facebook in there? Facebook's fallen that far. Is it even in the top 10 anymore? It's fallen.
It is, sir. I was going to get to that next, Dennis.
Because it's got some news. I'm excited to get to J&J. But, okay, let's go J&J. Or I'm excited to get to Facebook. Let's go J&J.
Okay, J&J, just hanging up near all-time highs, your value stock. Boom, boom. I'll just look at the dailies and that two-day low of 142.79. We are $3 away from that, so I'll look more at your resistance. Your all-time high made 3 days ago, 148.99. Your all-time closing high, though, was made a couple days earlier, 146.90. So 146.90 is my number. Big rally in the spoos here, Spencer. What did you do over there?
I'm not doing anything. I'm
just buying stock, Spence.
I'm trying.
Come on, Spencer. You got a full disclosure.
I'm busy shorting Comcast right now over our internet connectivity issues for the past past couple of days. But I'm not doing anything to the market. No.
Okay, Triple Big D. Pop. Anything on J&J? I know you're really excited about Facebook.
No, well, J&J, I'll just say it's had a lot of relative strength because people are hiding out there. And if the market really goes into collapse mode, so here's the two scenarios. Market bounces back and all the momos start to gain strength. You know, let's say, you know, 3 months from now, there's basically two scenarios. 3 months from now, you know, we get a trade deal, you know, the market bounces back, a lot of these momos come back. In that scenario, J&J probably doesn't perform well because it's not, you know, it's a more defensive stock. The second scenario, I believe, is market collapse where we have, you know, selling across the board. And I think there's a lot of money hiding in J&J thinking they are safe, and I don't think they're safe. So I think J&J is a case of heads you win. In 3 months, I think J&J is a case of heads you lose, tails you lose. I don't like J&J at all here. It's had too many people hiding out there. And I think in both scenarios, I think J&J could go lower. So short term, you know, it's held up. It's got good relative strength. But I'm basically trying to call a top here on J&J. I don't think it's going through 150.
All right, let's get to Facebook. What's your Facebook news?
Spencer, we'll throw this one to you because Friday night they announced a big buyback.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, $9 billion.
Oh, that's wow. You're right. They did. And that went, I'd forgotten about that on Friday.
I traded on the headline. I bought it at 138 on that headline. So I paid up 60 cents. And then I'm sitting there looking at it for 10 minutes. I'm like, is this not going to trade higher than this? They're doing a $9 billion buyback and it's not going to get up any higher. And then it started to lift, and then it got the 138.5, 139s, and actually went all the way up to the higher 139s before the S&P's turned around and started rolling over again. Facebook went all the way back down. So anyways, I'm out of my day trading position. I'm still long it in my investment portfolio. I still like it from a valuation perspective, and I don't have a ton of Momo stocks. I feel like this is going to be one, if the market comes back, this is going to be one that leads us back. So that's why I wanted to get some exposure to a few more of the Momo names, and Facebook is definitely one of those. And the valuation isn't crazy. So I kind of like it long-term. Short-term here, it's getting the buyback. It's an okay response here, up 1.4%, but not fantastic. So that's, you know, that's the bad news there. So Joel, break down the technicals, tell me what to do with Facebook.
Ah, I'll tell you what. So you're still in the trade here, huh?
Well, I'm out of the trade.
Okay.
I sold the trade. I sold Friday night when it went to the 139s. So you know how I am. I'm that scalper blood, Joel, so I'm out of it.
I'll tell you right now, I will get extremely bullish this stock if it takes out 143.5. Yeah, your 3 or 4 day highs are right there, 43.39 and 43.68. You have yet to challenge yesterday's high of 40.87, so there's your resistance points. But above 143.5, I think this thing finally might have a meaningful retracement. I mean, people would be licking their chops to see anywhere near a 50% retracement. But we went down almost 100 points in this thing, from 218.62 to 126.85. So if you want to be giddy and do like a half of the 90 is 45, that would take you up to 170, 180. Not getting carried away here, but Facebook has not really had a meaningful retracement as of late.
Better making a good point here, which you know I should make as well, is that this was not a brand new buyback.
I know, I saw that.
Doing a buyback, they just upped it to 9 billion. What was it before? Do we have the number that it was before? Maybe Spinner knows that off. I didn't look it up. But that is a good point. So it's not like it's a brand new $9 billion buyback. They were already doing a buyback. They just increased it.
They increased it by $9 billion, I think, is what it originally –
that's the whole thing. I know it's authorized. They have authorization to go up to 15, so they can go even higher. Right now, they've now obviously increased it to $9 billion. So they're believers, obviously, in the company.
You know what I like, though? Can I say something? I like this buyback. You know, because you see stocks sometimes, they, you know, rally, they do a great rally, then they pull back 5 points.
Well, Micron, they were doing buying all the bonds back in the 50s, and now it's 35. So at least they're buying low. It's a good point. At least the company's buying low here on Facebook.
And what about IBM?
Well, IBM bought the top. They were buying out of the 180s, 190s forever. They're buying GE, too. The worst one was GE. Well, how much was their buyback that they did in the 28s or 29s? Now, that was the worst one ever. $7. I've always argued that I like the special divvy.
You did.
Or an increase in the dividend better than a buyback. And I get, you know, they're doing the buyback. But, you know, if you don't want to commit to an increase in your long-term dividend, give me a special dividend then. Give me the cash back. Because, you know what? I feel like I can do a better job than some of these companies can with time in their stock. So as a shareholder, I would always like to have a special dividend other than a buyback, because a lot of times they buy these stocks back right at the highs.
How about a company coming out and saying, we're not doing a buyback, we're actually shorting our stock. We think it's really overvalued and ridiculous at this level. So all the insiders...
What's called insider selling. That's when they start filing and they got all the insider selling. That's when you ring the register too, when all the insiders are selling.
I guess that
GoPro
would be
GoPro 90.
Yeah, that would be. And you know that GoPro thing that that owner, they let him out. There was some special covenant that was broken by JP Morgan to let him sell that stock. I don't want to go into a long history of it, but that stock was still locked up. But as we digress here on the Monday morning, let's move on to our next component, which was a former number one component. Can you guess, Dennis? The number one component for a long time when we were doing the show, before Apple took it over. Commodity related.
Oh, ExxonMobil.
Yes.
Yeah, and okay, break down the ExxonMobil. I want to know what you think about this one.
Well, I think that we had a panic low at 74.70, a rebound high to 82, so call that 7-point move. You know, we get it here, we hold 77.5. I like it. You know, maybe it has a nice dividend, but man, oh man, until oil catches a bit, can you be that excited about this stock?
No. I mean, you do have the dividend. You do have support down in the lower 70s. I've played it off that support as a swing trade a couple of times, and it has worked. I didn't get it the last time, which I would have because it went from the 70. But, I mean, yeah, this is obviously just going to be related to oil. And with oil, it's been hit as hard as it has, hard to get excited about ExxonMobil. It is, I believe, best of breed. That and Chevron hold up better, you know, in an epic oil collapse, which we saw, obviously, back in 2016 when oil went down to the 20s. ExxonMobil and Chevron held up better than any of them. So if you're going to hide in oil, if you want to be in oil, these are good stocks to be in oil stocks. It's a matter of whether you like oil or not. So the other thing being said is, you know, you can look at what's happened to some of these other oil stocks. They've been absolutely killed. They've held up better. So you got to like the relative strength. That's all I'll say, though. I'm not sure. You know, I've been punished with some of my oil ETFs, obviously. Being a Canadian investor, a lot of my ETFs are chock full of oil stocks, and that has not been good. And that's pretty much why the Toronto Stock Exchange and the indexes, if you look at the S&P TSX 60, it's really went nowhere in the last 5 years. And that's probably because oil has weighed big time on that index.
And rounding out the top 10 here, stock we don't talk too much about, and I don't know if this is his first appearance in the top 10, UNH.
Wow.
Yeah. That has crept its way into the...
But they've held, you know, you look at all of them, CI, until recent, until last 3 days, you look at CI, obviously Aetna has had the deal, so that's all I got off the board, but I always look at CI, you can look at WellCare, WCG. They've shown some weakness recently, but the UNH, there's some people hiding out there too. So I wouldn't say it's exactly like the J&J trade, but I'm not sure I'm hiding out there anymore. Even though the trend is your friend, it's held up better. You got to like the relative strength. I'm still scared of a little bit of money hiding there as well. I mean, the big pharma, too, and it's all related. Merck and Lilly have held up. Merck, Lilly, and Pfizer have held up incredibly well, too, until recently in the last 3 days when they decided to start selling everything. So I still think the Tuesday trade is a big tell on a lot of these stocks, and that's why I think we topped out. That sell-off came from nowhere. On Tuesday, had Merck making a new high on the move, breaking out over 80, and then boom, boom, down to 76. UNH, similar story, breaking out, making a new high on the move. Breakout traders all excited Tuesday, or on Monday, was it Monday or Tuesday? Yeah, I guess it was Tuesday was the follow-through, and then we turned around and had the collapse. So I think now you have some traders caught long in a few of these stocks, and that's not good news that the short-term traders are caught long. So I think I'm a seller of rallies on UNH, just like on Merck. I think I would be a seller of rallies. I've had Merck in my long-term invest portfolio for basically 7 years. I sold half of the position there a little while ago when I got nervous, around $72 or $73. Obviously, it's continued to go higher there. I want to sell the whole thing. I'm in from like 30 bucks, but I'm going to hold on to some of it. And when you sell half a position, it's always nice. You're now playing entirely with the house's money. So I'm not that concerned about it anymore, but it's still a big position. Although I'm starting to get concerned that these stocks might, you know, be the same story as Johnson & Johnson, money hiding there now. And if we went into a big collapse, I'm not saying we're going to, but I'm saying in both scenarios where the market bounces back, I think these stocks, you know, underperform the market. And if the market starts to collapse, I think these stocks, the defensive money, will start to come out of this, realizing they're not as defensive as you think they are. So again, I'm just a little bit concerned hiding out in stocks like Merck, Pfizer, Lilly, Johnson & Johnson. I don't think they continue to hold up as well as everybody thinks they do in the event that the market continues to sell off.
So I think you went from UNH to Merck.
They're all related. Well, look at the Merck. Okay. How is that? Okay. UNH, Merck, similar.
Okay. I just wanted to say.
Defensive, health, it's all similar.
Okay.
I tried to put it all kind of in the same ball.
I mean, yeah, no, I'm following you. I hope our other 1,000 listeners are.
You know, I pair trade anything together. I'll put McDonald's with Apple. So UNH is at least I'm getting into both. They're both health stocks.
Yeah. For UNH, major level here is 265. You hit 65.25 just a few days ago. That was on Thursday. And then 65.03 was your low on November 27th. So that rounds out your top components here. We have 3 minutes before Kate Long comes here and is going to set us straight on where interest rates are going. But I want to talk two stocks before that. And the first one is, Dennis, I don't know, do we have enough time for your Netflix rant or should we wait till after the break?
Oh, with House of Cards.
Yeah.
And I won't give any, we won't, you know, there's 8, obviously a lot of people haven't seen it. It's out. I say I finished the final season of House of Cards last night, and I was very disappointed. That's all I'll say. I read some reviews. The one review was saying that they felt like this whole thing was put together, like it's like, you know, you're studying for the test the night before, and it's due, or you got the big project, it's due the night before, and you like put it together. I thought the writing was absolutely poor in the whole entire final season. Obviously, this was the Kevin Spacey show, and they tried to do their best to, you know, limit his loss, but they couldn't. this was Kevin Spacey, and I think, you know, and I was joking about this, but I feel like I'm a victim somewhat of Kevin Spacey's shenanigans here too, because I loved him as an actor. I think Kevin Spacey was one of the best actors of all time in every role that he's played. He's been such a good actor. And now I feel like now I can't see him anymore. And when I watch his old shows, I can't stop thinking about the stuff that he's done. So I can't even enjoy his performances anymore. So disappointed, bummer, you know, bummer with what happened with Kevin Spacey, and so disappointed with the final season of House of Cards. Netflix really dropped the ball on this one.
But luckily Netflix has a lot of other good shows that
they do, but this was their like first big hit. Not, you know, here was a real test for them to see, can they bounce back with House of Cards without Kevin Spacey? I will say test failed. Everybody says Netflix has the best content. This was their series. This was the one that kickstarted them all. And they epically dropped it in this last season, I believe. So, you know, I've always said they can't even come close to competing with Disney on content. I'm going to continue to say that. But, you know, they do have some good shows. There are some other good shows I've watched on Netflix. But I was really disappointed with House of Cards.
This chart is not looking good until you could clear 284. There's a pair of highs, 283.22, 284.21. So that you need to clear that. You're a good $20 away. If you take out the low of the move at 250, Katie bar the door, I will be looking for 236.11. That was your February low. February low of this year, 236.11. And just with stocks like this, when they get going in one direction, don't be a hero. And if you are trying to be a hero and this thing rebounds, just think about all the people that are caught between 400 and 265. They're not looking to buy. They're looking to sell the stories over in Netflix.
I think so, too. I mean, you know when it topped out was when this got a market cap higher than Disney. What are the two market caps now? Let's look at Disney market cap. And then people, and that's when it was coming out. Oh, Netflix has taken Disney out. You know, they're worth more than them now. And you think about Disney has the parks. Disney has, you know, of the movies we were talking about when we argued on the show, there was like 9 of the first 11 big hits were all Disney movies. I mean, now you look at the market caps here. This is the argument we were given when it was 400, why I just thought this valuation was ridiculous. So Netflix now $115 billion, and Disney's market cap is now 166. Yeah. So now you're looking at, you know, starting to get more reasonable there. But Netflix still at $115 billion market cap. Yes, everybody has it. I watch it as well. Love, you know, a lot of the programming. Love the ease of, you know, being able to watch a show and, you know, find something to watch. But with that, and I did like, what was that other one? Ozark. I thought that was great. So they did a really good job with Ozark. So they do have some good shows.
They got a lot of
but
good shows.
I don't think when this got over market cap over Disney, that's when it got ridiculous.
All right. It is 8:36. We're going to take a quick break and grab Kate Long, founder of Puerto Rico Clearinghouse. We'll be right back with Kate. And as promised, here we are now with Kate Long. She is a muni bonds expert, founder of Puerto Rico Clearinghouse. Kate, how's it going this morning?
Good. Hi, guys. Hope you're well.
Kate, thanks for coming on. I think we can call you our cheeriest guest here, and we certainly need that. We certainly need that here in these markets with the recent volatility. But let's start with something that's near and dear here to Benzinga and a lot of the employees here in Detroit. I mean, how long was it that they went through a bankruptcy? And, you know, came out of it now, you know, if you were a holder of those initial bonds, you know, sorry for that. But tell us what Detroit are. They're dipping their toe back into the municipal markets.
Yeah. So 4 years ago, Detroit had the largest municipal bankruptcy in the history of the United States, since been eclipsed by Puerto Rico, of course. But so they were locked out of the market. They finished their bankruptcy, which is basically cutting, you know, bonded debt and pensions for public employees and some other things. But last week, Goldman Sachs underwrote about $140 million of general obligation bonds for the city. They priced them about, you know, around 4.3% or, you know, like 140 over the 10-year muni 10-year AAA. And it's just extremely positive for the city, and it means they're back on track and, you know, back in the sort of, you know, blessed company of all the other cities in America that issued debt.
And so Goldman Sachs was the first one to make the move. Is there, you know, is there a, you know, kind of like a catch on effect? You think other firms will start doing that, or do you think this is just a one off with Goldman Sachs?
No, so when muni bonds are underwritten, the issuer, the city, just talks around the market to various underwriters, and then depending on either who's offering best terms or the best support, they choose. And I think it's just important to note that Goldman, you know, is in the top tier of municipal underwriters, and you know, I'm sure Bank of America would have done it, or Citi, or you know, Morgan Stanley, any of these guys would have done it, but you know, they went with Goldman, and that just means they'll have very good aftermarket support. And then if they want to come again to the market, which they will, yeah, I'm sure Goldman will be in there actively trying to be the primary underwriter.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, 4.3%, I mean, in these volatile markets, that's, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at here. And what also I think I think what's interesting about this is, you know, you have an environment here where, you know, the auto industries, I mean, GM has perked up a little bit. Ford's back under $9. I guess this is maybe a little bit of testament to the, you know, the city of Detroit diversifying a little bit. I mean, we're still, you know, the Motor City, the automotive capital of the world, but bringing in tech companies like Benzinga, I guess that diversification is not a bad thing when it comes to being a big city.
I think everyone is very, very proud of Detroit and the efforts of Mayor Dugan to, you know, put the streetlights back on, to, you know, basically get services stabilized and investment, you know, especially in the downtown area, increased. You know, I think it's just a really wonderful success story. And I know it's due to a lot of hard work of everyone there. And, you know, you had some very, very rough times, but hopefully it's going to be a lot brighter future for the city now.
So you mentioned it was the number one municipal bankruptcy that was eclipsed by Puerto Rico here. And boy, I mean, have you made any visits down there? What, you know, let's talk about, you know, the human aspect of what's going on in Puerto Rico. And then, you know, let's just talk about it from a financial perspective.
Yeah. So basically after the hurricane, many people left. It's not clear, a couple hundred thousand people left. Islanders, and then they've been coming back. So we don't really have a clear picture yet of how much out-migration, but that followed years and years of out-migration. The good news is the unemployment rate in Puerto Rico now is the lowest it's been in over 50 years. And that is mainly due to federal funds coming in. There's reconstruction happening everywhere. We have a very, very severe problem in Puerto Rico where over half the homes were built informally without a title or a property deed. And it was very difficult for FEMA to give funds to those people because one of the requirements, federal requirements, is that you show ownership of a property. So working that out has been kind of a problem for FEMA, and they've loosened some of the, you know, the documentation requirements. But that's lagging. And then also because there's been rampant fraud in the Puerto Rican government for decades, essentially, FEMA put in a bunch of additional layers of oversight for federal funds, and that slowed down some of the money. So, but even saying all that, you know, with the limited federal reconstruction funds that have gone into the economy is going bonkers, really. It's really unbelievable. So, you know, the question long-term is, will people come back? And in my view, they, you know, really have to continue concentrating like Detroit did on, you know, improving essential services like the police, the public education system. You know, these are the things that have to be healthy in a community for people to want to locate there. So, you know, overall, it's very good after the tremendous amount of suffering that people had, but it's on the right track.
All right, Kate, I'm so glad that we have you on because I think a lot of the chaos here in the market can be related here to just what the heck is going to go on with interest rates here. Many arguments, oh, the Fed is way behind the curve here. They should be raising interest rates at a much higher rate. And So they do a couple of interest rate hikes to the disdain of our President Trump. And all of a sudden, it seemed like it was like last Tuesday. It just like, okay, the 5 of the 10 year, you know, crossed. And now we're automatically having a recession. So how did things turn that quickly from the Fed being behind the curve in raising rates to, oh, my God, We're flat out in a recession / depression. I mean, how could things turn that quickly?
Yeah, so I think that signal, that inversion, the curve inversion, is not really relevant now after we've had, you know, almost 10 years of quantitative easing of, you know, the Fed suppressing rates. You know, to assume that a normal market signal would, you know, would suddenly just be there after, you know, all those years of a distorted market, I'm not really sold on. The economy is very strong. You know, there's issues with China, which do affect the U.S. economy. But overall, I think people are not that levered. You know, this is what, when you went into 2008, 7 and 8, you know, households were extremely levered. And, you know, overall, the economy was very, very over leveraged. That doesn't really exist now in terms of credit. So, I mean, I think there's a lot more to run. I think the Fed has to deal with these trade issues, you know, the reverberations of that. And, you know, President Trump's a total wild card. We've never had a president attack, you know, probably the Fed since maybe all the way back to, who knows, you know, Franklin Roosevelt. So it's just, I think they don't really have the ammunition or the good defense against him when he goes after them.
Right. So, I mean, I mean, if you look at things on a historical perspective, rates are at, you know, very, very low levels. And I just, you know, I mean, when they're talking about the raises, 3% and 4%, I mean, I just think that if, you know, the Fed gets too carried away, which maybe people are perceiving, that, you know, it's going to stall the economy. And I don't think that we're going to grow it.
Right.
4, 5, 6%, and nor do I think that, you know, we're, you know, I mean, if you look around Detroit, it doesn't look like a recession or a financial crisis unless, you know, unless this oldest building is done on, on debt and it's not going to be paid back. So that's a pretty interesting perspective on the market. So looking into 2019, you think the Fed's going to ease up a little bit? I mean, there was many as I think I saw Goldman Sachs today backed off their 4 interest hike move. Do you have any expectations for the Fed in 2019?
Yeah, I think there's also, you know, the sort of general market consensus of 3 hikes in 2019. I think you have to understand, too, from the Fed's perspective is that they want rates to be at a higher level. So if they need to back off and, you know, inject, you know, liquidity or credit into the economy, they're at a high enough interest rate level they can do that. So at, you know, 2.25 or wherever the Fed funds rate is now, they don't have a lot of room to lower that. I think they'd like it higher just from sort of to build up, ammunition on their part. So they use the rate as a tool. To stimulate, they also use it to try and cool the economy. There's both sides of it. So, you know, it's really hard. Their goals is not necessarily what you would perceive as overall the economy's goal. So,
no, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kate.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to ask you about Illinois. We've been talking about that state for several years here. And,
yeah.
They haven't built the bullet yet, but just any updates in on Illinois?
Yeah, so, well, the Democrat governor won the state of Illinois, so now you have Democrats control all the legislature and the governor. You have the mayor's race for Chicago coming up in May, and, you know, I think that, you know, and President Obama's from Illinois, and I think, you know, he's been in the background, you know, making recommendations, but I could see them, you know, over the next few years going the route of Puerto Rico, where they ask Congress to, you know, impose some kind of framework to restructure their debts. And in the case of Illinois, you have like 4 times the pension debt that you have bonded debt. So, They need some way to, you know, alter that. And they can wipe out the bonded debt, which is my side, but they still have this massive pension debt to deal with. And the only way you can deal with pension debt in Illinois is, one, either change the state constitution or get Congress to impose this PROMESA structure and break those pensions in a court. So
we've been on the line with Kate Long. She's a muni bond expert and the founder of the Puerto Rico Clearinghouse, joining us today. Thank you very much, Kate. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Joe, and happy holidays to you guys.
All right, a couple observations here made by Dennis, and I'm concurring here. I was watching that 25-point spoo rally since we've been here on the show, and Apple went absolutely nowhere, and now is going down. What is
leading the charge down here once again? We just talked about this 15 minutes ago. So Citi comes out with a note here, lowering the price target down to $200 from $240. That's your catalyst here. Why Apple is showing extreme weakness here? Because Citi with a bearish note.
I'll give you two levels, and they're monthly levels: 165.27. That was the May low, and then your April low was 160.63. And I don't know if Jeremy's listened, but we were talking on Friday about pulling the trigger on this on the short side when it took out 170. I went to pick up Lisa at the airport when it did that, and I sure hope, Jeremy, you got that trade on, because when a stock has that much support, it kind of like reminds me when that XHB was hanging out at 38 even a couple months ago. So need to get back over that $170 level, and we are going in the opposite direction.
The relative strength is just out.
Horrible.
I'm going to say, like we said at the top of the show here, talking completely against my book, I think it's going to see 160. I said I didn't know if I think it's going to see it today. But I don't know. The way it's going, maybe it's going to. Anyways, not pretty. I mean, again, just reiterating, every time the market rallies, this one is one of the laggards. Every time the market starts to decline, this is the leader to the downside. This is, from a day trading perspective, not what I'm interested in. From an investing perspective, I still have it. I still like it from a valuation. I mean, they're still making a hell of a lot of money. But I think there's no reason to jump in here for a trade and be a hero.
Okay, Dennis, quiz for you. What is the opposite of Apple in the stock market as far as...
Well, I said Microsoft already, so I don't know.
One more. I think...
What do you got for me?
Come on. I know you're going
to
get upset.
There's only 4,000 stocks to guess from.
Can I guess?
Spencer's going to get it.
Is it Twitter?
Twitter's doing okay.
He's got something else in his mind,
but
though.
It's not Twitter.
Yeah, okay. A stock that's always
Tesla.
In the news. Yes.
Yeah, and Ed Parker says it there. They had Musk was on 60 Minutes. I mean, this stock, the honey badger of all stocks here. I will say, I don't like Friday's tape. So I've been saying and sitting with my Tesla bull hat on here for a long time, Friday's tape, not good. This thing got up to 380, the same level it was failing from back in August there. If we look at the charts, when obviously all the shenanigans with the, you know, as again, taking out of 420 stuff was going on back in the summer. And we kissed up near that 380, got it to 379.49, so I'll call it 380, and peeled back 20 points off those highs. That was a reversal day, in my opinion, guys. You know, we obviously didn't, you know, get the full, you know, where we made a new low on the from the previous day. But closing week like that, now you get a little bit of strength. He was on 60 Minutes. As a trader, I'm selling the rally in Tesla. So, again, just like the market turned Tuesday, I think Tesla turned Friday. So I think the easy money on the long side has been made. I think you could actually see continued weakness here today in Tesla, which is a bold call because, you know, you're seeing a stock that's trading up 4 points in the pre-market. As a trade, I like it from the short side here. That's only a trade. I still think Tesla's got a story. Don't get married to that short position. But I think as a trade, I kind of like it here from the short side.
And one thing here to mention about Tesla, the catalyst for that move on Friday is not really like the catalyst you like to see. The catalyst came from a Jeffries upgrade. I don't know.
They just overdid it.
Yeah.
They just overdid it. And up to three, you know, you're going to trade that thing up 10 points on that upgrade. And then you're getting back to that old resistance level. I think people are just like, oh, I got to get on this bandwagon. This is breaking out. I think that little breakout, because we did get above the highs in the last couple of days. I think the breakout was a fake out. And I think now you got some people caught. I think this thing could see 340 in the next few days.
I mean, that's
a big call, you know, because this thing is at 361 right now, but I'm a fader of Tesla rallies, and I wasn't. This is the first time I've put on my Tesla bear hat, and I got it on here temporarily right now.
I mean, this stock also has been in a trading range. Really, you know, you got a little bit under 250, and you have spent some time over 350. But if you go back all the way to between 250 and 350, that's basically been the range for over a year here. So just, you know, they're loose numbers here. If you're shorting at 350, you certainly don't want to see it over 380. But just look at the majority of the volume where the stock is traded. Traded a lot of stock at 300, below 300, above 300. So keep an eye on the low from Friday if you're looking for continued downside. And Dennis, there's a exact matching bottom at 352 even. Your two-day low is 350.76. So Tesla bears, you don't want to see – Tesla bulls, you don't want to see a breach of 350. Tesla bears, you do. We got 5 minutes remaining here, Dennis, and I can't imagine the imbalances are giving you much information. We were way down. We were up a little bit, and now we're flat. Anything standing out in imbalance land?
Yeah, you know what? There's a lot of sell imbalances here this morning. Square, 95,000 to sell. Square not participating in the rally. So when we look under the hood of the Qs, it ain't pretty, guys. I know you can see the Qs trading up here this morning, but when we look under the hood, the first thing you look at is Apple, and Apple's down $2 here now in that Citi note, so that's not helping. Square is trading down 50 cents right now. That's not helping. Not that Square is a big component of the Qs, but it's a Momo. It's a name that people gravitate to. It's a name that people associate with the NASDAQ, at least in the short term here right now. So when it's showing weakness, it spooks the market a little bit more. I'm seeing really selling balances across the board. Gee, the internal selling balance, it's under $7 here, $6.97. Again, I'm sticking with Inch, and I'm going to stick with the $5 PT as long as Inch is saying it could go to $5. Bank of America, 276,000 to sell. That's not helping. It's in the red. Even stocks like Pfizer, 107,000 to sell. So where they were hiding a little defense, that's not this morning. Looks like they're going to sell though. Visa, 56,000 to sell. It's trading down 40 cents in the pre-market. Citigroup, 131,000 to sell. It's trading down 25 cents in the pre-market. There are some stocks that are trading higher, so it's not all bad news. But when I look under the hood here on this S&P rally, I don't see a lot of stocks that are really like, oh, that's the source of the strength. So I think this market, this little rally we're getting here, could be short-lived.
Let's just mention the pot sector here a little bit. You got that pop and cron. We talked about that with Jeremy Newsom on Friday, and it did get that pop. It didn't. He wanted to short it in a 14 handle. I don't think he had a locate on it. And I think when he was looking at the spread, you could drive
the truck.
I think you
can get a locate. Can't you get a locate?
Can you get a locate on that one?
I feel like you can. Let me go check it out.
13.
Keep talking while I go check.
Okay. Anyways, 1395 you hit. That was not in the pre-market high. Sold off to 1236. So you still got a gap between 1236 and 1057. Dennis, you got a locate
on
that?
No problems on Kronos. Yeah, easy to borrow.
Yeah, you got a little bit of a bigger short pool available.
Well, I have multiple pools that I go, but I had no problem at all. I didn't. It's yeah.
Okay. Any ratings? We got less than 2 minutes here. Any ratings that you want to touch on?
Spencer, there was a couple. There was a lot. There was actually a lot, but not a lot that were really jumping out at us. Like, whoa, that's a big call.
Yeah, that's how I would say this one I went to. Let's see here. ex-US CEO catching an upgrade from UBS to neutral, but they lowered their price target to $22, so I hate
$21, Joel, this thing now. I guess I sold the top on that. I dumped that out of my long-term portfolio at $45. I got one of them right. That was back in early 2018 when it got up there. Now you're looking at $21. We got down in April of 2017 to $18.55. I think that's where we're going to test. Can it, you know, hold there? That'll be the question there. But, man, the stock has been an ugly, ugly year for U.S. Steel.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't know what month it was in here that I had some 40 puts in this thing, man. This must have been – I don't know. I guess this might have been in March or April. Maybe 43.5 was the level I was looking at because I see multiple lows in that area when it broke down. But, you know, just if you ever look and you pull up your pro, you ever look at like the earnings pattern in this stock? It's just it's like
so cyclical.
Yeah, I mean they make, they lose, they make, they lose, they lose big, they make big. I just for me, I would wait to maybe if it got back under $20, that had been a long term level in it. But U.S. Steel trading flat here, low the move yesterday at 21.17. But I remember that thing got back under 20 and traded under 20 for a long time. That was back in 2017 when you got as low as 18.55. So if you're being patient long term, wait for under $20 here in X. And I'll just go off.
We got a Qualcomm headline just breaking.
What do you got?
Follow the story, but they're saying they won the ban on the sale of some iPhones in China. That's okay. Just breaking here right now. Apple's just falling on that. You're watching Apple fall another dollar. That's your headline. It's gosh. Qualcomm, QCOM. QCOM getting a little bit of a lift initially, now turning around and actually just went red. Now Qualcomm's back to the green here, but Apple is getting hit hard on this here. So 1 point, now we're down 2%, 165. I mean, maybe you could get like a washout here on this. That's one thing to consider. If this thing just collapses down, and I think, that 160 level I still like as a potential bounce trade, but there's major movement here on Apple now.
And if you're a shorter-term trader, swing trader, or you have a target here at the May low, what, 65.27? What do you got here? You got a low of 165.03. So you gotta look at it. Potential support here, 165. But man, when things turn, when the momentum turns in a momentum stock, it's hard to reverse it.
Yeah, it really is. The ball gets going in one direction and it takes so, like, look, the Facebook turn, obviously on that quarter, it's never really got it going since then. Obviously Netflix. All your China stocks have fallen, Netflix, it's so hard. Once that ball starts turning, and if you can identify when it has turned there, and then you get that rally in that, and after it's turned, that's your selling opportunity. So just like with Netflix, every time that's rallied, really since, really since September, it's been a great selling opportunity. And Apple's been the same story. Every little rally we've had, we get down under 200, we get back up to 210, it's been a selling opportunity there. So it's hard. Facebook's been the same story. Every time we've rallied 5, 10%, we've had some pretty wicked little rallies in there. 140 to 155 there in the one day on Facebook. And it's just been a selling opportunity. It goes right back to what we've been saying. Selling stocks that are in downtrends, selling the rips in stocks in downtrends, and buying the dip in stocks with uptrends. And the biggest issue is that a lot of these stocks are in downtrends now, and that's why the sell the rip has been working better than the buy the dip. Apple really whipping around on this.
What are we doing? We're trading down a $1.85. If you are trading Apple short term, keep an eye on that pre-market low. That pre-market low came in at 165.03. Spencer, we went a few minutes over. Okay. We started a few minutes late. You want to wrap up things and preview our exciting Tuesday show?
Well, as we have every Tuesday, we'll be joined by Nick Shaheen on tomorrow's show. If you missed any part of today's show, catch our podcast, the drill by now, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, or just rewatch the show on YouTube. Thanks to our guest, Kate Wong. Thanks to all of you in both our chats, both on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. That second chat is going all day after the show ends as well, so check that out there. Please remember, all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. And on that note, hope everyone has a good day, and we'll see you on Tuesday.